Harry Potter Hogwarts Battle, the complete guide to the cooperative deck builder everyone's still obsessed with. Imani here, I brought the receipts, the table test, and one strong opinion. Harry Potter Hogwarts Battle is a cooperative, campaign-style deck-building board game for 2 to 4 players, ages 11+, that runs about 30 to 60 minutes per session. You play as Harry, Ron, Hermione, or Neville, spending influence to buy spells, allies, and items into a growing deck and dealing attack to defeat villains before they overrun Hogwarts locations. It unfolds across 7 sealed games, 1 per book film, each adding new cards, villains, and rules box by box, climaxing in a Game 7 showdown with Voldemort and 6 Horcruxes. Designed by Forest Prusen Creative, Kami Mandel, and Andrew Wolf, it's widely loved as a gateway cooperative for Potter fans, board game geek complexity -2.085, with the main caveat being it's a mostly one-and-done campaign with luck of the draw swing. Okay, but have you seen what everyone's still saying about Hogwarts Battle? Years after release, this is the game that the wider board game community keeps handing to non-gamers and watching them fall completely in love. The pitch is irresistible. You and up to 3 friends are Harry, Ron, Hermione, and Neville, and you're going to fight your way through all 7 years at Hogwarts, 1 sealed box at a time, building a deck of spells, allies, and magical items as the story and the difficulty gets darker. What makes it sing isn't just the license, it's that the designers built the asterisk campaign into the components. You crack game 1 and it's a gentle, friendly tutorial, 3 villains, simple cards, a soft place to learn what deck building even is, then you open game 2's little envelope, then game 3. And somewhere around year 4 you look up and realize the table is covered in cards, the dark arts deck is genuinely scary, and you're white-knuckling a turn trying to keep your last location from falling. Meeple Mountain called the structure progressive complexity mirroring the darkening tone of the series, and honestly, that's the whole magic trick. This guide is the one I wish I'd had when I started. We'll cover exactly how the core loop works, influence versus attack, the Hogwarts market, dark arts, locations, stunning, how the 7-box campaign and the Horcrux finale are structured, which expansions are actually worth your galleons, and in what order the asterisk real tactics groups used to beat the famously rough Game 7, who this is and isn't for, and where it shines and falls short. Every number here is sourced from the rulebook, the op, and accessible reviews, and where the community disagrees, I'll bring you both sides. Bring a sorting system and a free afternoon, you're going to want to keep playing. If this guide helps, using the Amazon links on the page is a simple way to support Puzzlewick at no additional cost to you. What is Harry Potter Hogwarts Battle? Harry Potter Hogwarts Battle is a cooperative, legacy-flavored deck-building card game published by USA Apolly, now operating as the op in 2016, designed by Forest Prusen Creative, Kami Mandel, and Andrew Wolf. You play 2 to 4 players, ages 11+, in roughly 30 to 60 minutes per session. Here's the shape of it. Every player picks a hero, Harry, Ron, Hermione, or Neville, and starts with an identical-ish 10-card starter deck built around the spell asterisk Alohomora. Working together, you spend a resource called Influence to buy better cards, spells, allies, items from a shared market, and you generate attack damage to defeat villains. Meanwhile, the Dark Arts deck punishes you each turn, and villains try to seize locations. If they take every location, you all lose. If you defeat every villain first, you win. The twist that hooks everyone is the campaign. The base box contains 7 sealed minigames, labeled Game 1 through Game 7, each corresponding to a Harry Potter book year. You don't get everything at once, you open a new box only after finishing the previous game, and each one introduces new cards, new villains, new locations, and new rules. It's a deck builder with a built-in story arc, and the components literally mature as the kids do, the card art ages up alongside the characters, Gamosity loved this detail. It's not technically a legacy game in the destroyer component sense, nothing is permanent and you can fully reset and replay, but it feels legacy because of that escalating, unfolding structure. Bring your Hogwarts house pride, you'll be rooting hard for these 4 by year 3. Who actually made it? The design is credited to Forest Prusen Creative, Kami Mandel, and Andrew Wolf, published by USA Apolly / the op in 2016. Heads up, some listings misattribute it, the credited trio above is the verified one. The community's one-line pitch, a long-running board game geek thread, literally titled it, "This might be the cooperative deck builder you've been looking for." That framing, gateway cooperative, not a heavyweight, is the consensus that's held up for years. How do you play Hogwarts Battle? The core loop explained, let me walk you through one turn because once it clicks it's asterisk so smooth. 1. Resolve the dark arts. At the start of each turn you reveal 1 or more dark arts event cards, the number scales up in later games. These are the bad guys hitting back, losing health, discarding cards. Adding control to locations. Resolve them, then trigger any villain abilities tied to them. 2. Play your hand and act. You draw a hand of 5 cards and play them. Cards generate 2 key resources. Influence, the coin lightning bolt icon, you're buying asterisk power. Attack damage, the fist icon, you're fighting asterisk power. You also heal, draw extra cards, or roll Hogwarts house dice depending on what you play. 3. Spend influence at the market. 6. Hogwarts cards sit face up in the market at all times. Spend influence equal to a card's cost to buy it. It goes to your discard pile, classic deck builder. You'll shuffle it into your deck later. Empty slots refill immediately. So the market keeps flowing. 4. Spend attack on villains. Assign your attack tokens to villains equal to their health. Reduce a villain to 0 and it's defeated, you claim its one-time reward, extra influence, removing control, healing, etc. 5. End your turn. Any unspent influence or attack is discarded, you can't bank it across your own turns. Discard your remaining hand, then draw a fresh 5. The two pillars of every decision are the eternal deck builder tension. Buy power now, influence, or kill the thing hurting you, attack. And the beautiful cooperative wrinkle, you can gain resources on another hero's turn and keep them for yours, means good teams set each other up across the table. Lose condition, villains take every location. Win condition, you defeat every villain first. Bring patience for turn 1, by turn 3 everyone at the table is fluent. Full base game components laid out the mental model that wins games. Experienced players describe Hogwarts battle as a race. Run down the villain deck faster than they can run down the location deck. Frame every turn around that race. If you're buying cards but the locations are bleeding control, you're losing the only race that matters, pivot to attack. Resources don't bank, so spend smart. Together, leftover influence and attack vanish at end of turn. Before you waste a stray influence, ask the table, can someone use a market card more than you? And remember, you can earn on a teammate's turn and hold it for yours. Coordinate so nobody overshoots a villain's health by 4. Is Harry Potter Hogwarts battle worth it? Short answer. For Harry Potter fans and anyone wanting a gateway cooperative, absolutely yes. For jaded heavy Eurogamers chasing deep strategy, it's a softer maybe. Let me give you the honest community read, why people adore it. The theme is baked into the mechanics, not painted on. Allies show up in the year they appear in the books. Locations are real story beats. The art ages with the characters. The campaign rollout is a genuine joy. Every box is a little present. Meeple Mountain, if you're a Harry Potter fan who enjoys cooperative board games, I strongly suggest you check it out. Gamosity called it asterisk a success on most every level asterisk and the perfect introduction into this fun world of hobby games. The honest cons, there's real luck of the draw, a clogged hand or a cruel dark arts flip can swing a game. There's no way to remove weak starting cards from your deck, more on that in strategy, it's a defining quirk. The later games can feel like the market gets stuck when you can't afford anything. And the box is asterisk, famously asterisk, big and awkward on a shelf. Most pointedly, it's largely a one-time campaign, the surprises only land once, and post-campaign replay value divides the community. The verdict most fans land on, it's a play the campaign, treasure it, then decide. It's not the deepest deck builder on the table, board game geek weight tilde 2.085 squarely family medium light, but as a shared asterisk experience asterisk, especially with a Potter-loving partner, kid, or friend group, it punches way above its complexity. Bring the right expectations, and it's one of the most beloved licensed co-ops ever made. The it's not deep take and why it misses the point, some hardcore gamers shrug it off as okay to good, not great. Fair on pure mechanical depth. But the community keeps clapping back. You're not buying it to optimize an engine, you're buying it to live the 7 books with people you love. Judge it as an experience, not a brain burner, and it soars. Real talk on the price, if full price feels steep, wait 2 weeks, it'll go on sale. How does the 7-game campaign and the box-by-box unlock work? This is the part that makes Hogwarts Battle asterisk Hogwarts Battle. The base game ships with 7 sealed boxes inside the big box, 1 per book year. You play them in order and you only open the next box after completing the current game. Here's the escalation broadly. Game 1 is the tutorial, just 3 villains, faced one at a time, simple cards, no scary mechanics. It exists to teach deck building to total newcomers, and it's brilliant at that. Games 2-4 layer in more villains at once, more locations, tougher dark arts, and new card types. The difficulty climbs steadily, the tone darkens. Games 5-6 Order of the Phoenix / Half-Blood Prince territory get genuinely tense with stacked villains and nastier events. Many groups consider Game 6 a real test. Game 7 is the finale. Destroy 6 Horcruxes, defeat all the other villains, and only then can you damage Lord Voldemort himself. The Horcruxes are destroyed by rolling specific symbols on the Hogwarts house dice. Early Horcruxes need a single symbol, later ones a asterisk combination asterisk. It's the brutal capstone, its own section below. Because nothing is destroyed, you can reset the whole campaign and play again, the boxes just reseal conceptually. That's the difference between this and a true legacy game. The reveals are one time, but the system is permanent. A gorgeous design choice, the number of dark arts cards you flip, the count of villains, and the deck complexity all ramp together, so the game's asterisk pressure tracks the series' rising stakes almost beat for beat. Bring a notebook if you're a completionist, some groups love logging which year tripped them up. The sealed game pack boxes you open in sequence. Game 1 as a teaching tool is universally praised. Reviewers keep singling out Game 1, meant as an introduction to deck building. It makes the game approachable for fans. If you have a deck building newbie at the table, this gentle on-ramp is the secret weapon. Don't skip it, even if you're a veteran. Don't open boxes early and consider a campaign log. Resist peeking. Half the joy is the reveal when you crack the next year's envelope. Keep a sticky note of where you stopped and which heroes played whom, since campaigns often span several game nights with the same group. Which Hogwarts battle expansions should you buy and in what order? Once the campaign hooks you, you'll want more. Here's the clean map and the community's strong opinions on order and worth. 1. You venture into the Forbidden Forest, adding Luna Lovegood as a fifth playable hero, new monster mechanics, encounter cards, think Horcrux-like mini-objectives, and a nasty detention deck that shoves useless cards into your deck. It increases difficulty and complexity. Buy this if you found the base game too easy and want a meatier challenge. It bumps the cap toward 5 players. 2. Adds charms which expand your player board and powers, potions, and Ginny Weasley as a playable character, supporting up to 2 to 5 players. The community read gives you more tools, so it tends to make the game a touch asterisk easier while adding strategic richness. Buy this if you want more variety and player options, especially for bigger groups. Order, both integrate into the base campaign and can be combined. The widely repeated rule of thumb, monster box to make it harder, charms and potions to make it easier, so pick based on how your group felt about base difficulty, if buying both. Many add monster box first for the challenge, then charms and potions for the tools, but there's no forced sequence. You build a deck and stun your opponent 3 times to win. Using hex cards to disrupt and house bonus cards for combos, its content does not mix into the cooperative base game. Buy it only if you specifically want a head-to-head wizard duel for 2. Are the cooperative expansions worth it? If you love the campaign and want to keep playing the asterisk same asterisk group of heroes with fresh challenges, yes. If you're campaign and done, you can comfortably skip them. Bring the monster box if your table is crushing game 7 too easily, it'll humble you. The single best buying heuristic in the fandom, forget agonizing over the expansion list. The community boiled it down to 1 sentence. If you want it harder, go monster box. If you want it easier, go charms and potions. That's genuinely the whole decision for the 2 cooperative add-ons. Defense Against the Dark Arts is its own thing. Don't buy Dada expecting to bolt it onto your cooperative campaign. The op is explicit that none of the content is designed to be incorporated. It's a separate, competitive 2-player duel. Great for couples duos who want PvP, irrelevant if you only want the cooperative. What's the strategy to actually win, especially the brutal Game 7? Alright, this is the heart of it. Here's how real groups beat this game, including the infamous finale. 1. Understand the deck thinning trap. This is the one thing newcomers get wrong. In asterisk most asterisk deck builders, Dominion, etc., you thin your deck by trashing weak cards. Hogwarts Battle has almost no way to remove your starting chaff. So the thinning here isn't trashing, it's not diluting yourself with cheap junk. Every card you buy is in your deck forever. Don't snap up a 1-cost filler card just because you can afford it. A deck stuffed with weak cards draws weak hands. Buy fewer, higher impact cards and let your good cards come up more often by comparison. 2. Focus fire villains, always. Do not spread attack across multiple villains to be fair. Gang up, pick the villain hurting you most and delete it this turn or next, then move on. A half-damaged villain is still a fully active threat, a dead one is a reward in your pocket. 3. Balance influence and attack as a team, not per player. Designate roles. One hero can lean into influence and play banker, pumping buying power, another leans into attack and damage. Hermione is the community darling for ramping influence fast, grab pricey cards early. A damage-focused hero closes villains. 4. Run a designated tank. A clever legal trick. Let one hero soak the damage, take the health hits, get stunned, so the others keep their hands full and their resources flowing. Stunning costs you cards and adds control, so manage it, but funneling pain to one person beats everyone bleeding. 5. Protect that first location. Early locations are softer, later ones are vicious. Keep the current location alive as long as possible and clear control when villain rewards let you. Draco's defeat, for instance, removes control. 6. Never refuse a Hogwarts card. The versatile Hogwarts-type cards are the most adaptable in the game and become asterisk crucial asterisk late. In Game 7, they let you choose which house dice to roll, which is exactly what you need for Horcruxes. Beating Game 7 specifically, you must destroy all 6 Horcruxes and defeat every other villain before you can deal a single point to Voldemort. Horcruxes are destroyed by rolling the right house dice symbols. Early ones need 1 symbol, later ones a asterisk combination asterisk. So the winning Game 7 deck is loaded with dice rolling cards and Hogwarts cards for dice flexibility alongside reliable attack. Sequence it, thin Voldemort's escorts, grind Horcruxes with your dice engine, keep locations breathing, and only at the very end pile attack onto the Dark Lord. Groups that lose Game 7 almost always underinvested in dice slash Horcrux cards and tried to brute force it. Bring a dice rolling engine to Year 7 or Voldemort walks. The Hogwarts House Dice in Play Game 7 is a dice engine puzzle in disguise. You can't touch Voldemort until all 6 Horcruxes are destroyed, and Horcruxes need specific house dice symbols, later ones need combinations. Build toward dice rolling cards plus Hogwarts cards, which let you pick dice across games 5 to 6 so you're ready. Brute force attack decks stall out here every time. Deck thinning doesn't matter here, and that's the lesson a spicy community truth, because there's no real card purge. Classic deck thinning strategy is basically off the table. Veterans who reflexively buy cheap cards to cycle actively hurt their deck. The takeaway flips intuition: buy less, buy bigger, and treasure draw extra card effects to dig to your bombs. Who is Hogwarts battle for kids, families, solo, board gamers? Let's match the game to the table because the right audience adores it and the wrong one bounces. Harry Potter fans, the bullseye. If you love the books, films, this is almost a no-brainer. The fan service is constant and earned. It's the kind of game that turns a Potter-loving non-gamer into someone who suddenly wants to know what else asterisk is in the hobby, families, and kids. Officially 11+, and that's a fair floor for reading the cards and grasping resource management, though plenty of younger Potter-obsessed kids play happily asterisk with an adult co-piloting, and since it's cooperative, an adult can guide without beating the child. Game 1's gentle tutorial makes it a fantastic family on-ramp. Gateway slash new gamers, this is one of the best first deck builders out there. Reviewers repeatedly call it the perfect introduction to hobby games. The cooperative format removes the sting of losing to a person, and the difficulty ramps as your skills do. Solo players. Yes, you can play solo. The op even publishes official solo play rules. Run one or more heroes yourself. It's not the deepest solo experience in the genre, but it absolutely works for a one-player campaign run. Two players. Plays great at two in the cooperative base game. And if your duo wants competitive asterisk, that's exactly what Defense Against the Dark Arts delivers. Experienced heavy gamers, set expectations. At tilde 2.08 weight, it's medium light. Strategy chasers may find it breezy, but many veterans still keep it specifically as the game they pull out with asterisk family, partners, and kids. It's a connector. Not a brain burner, bring the kids and a Potter superfan. This is the table where everyone's on the same side. Playing with younger kids, lean on the cooperative because it's fully cooperative. An adult can sit beside a younger child and coach every decision without letting them win feeling fake. You genuinely want the same outcome. Start at game 1, let the kid roll the house dice, they love it, and graduate games as their confidence grows. Solo play is officially supported. The op publishes dedicated solo rules. Take on Voldemort single-handedly. So if your group can't always assemble, you can run the campaign yourself controlling one or more heroes. Soloist report it's a satisfying, if luck swingy, way to experience the whole arc. Where does Hogwarts battle shine and where does it fall short? Time for the unvarnished both sides, because a flagship guide owes you honesty. Where it absolutely shines, theme woven into mechanics. Allies, locations, and villains all arrive at the asterisk right story moment. The art literally ages with the characters. It's one of the most thematically integrated licensed games out there. The campaign reveal, cracking each sealed box, is a genuine thrill. The escalating dark arts and villain counts make the pressure track the series' darkening tone. Cooperative accessibility. No player elimination, no beating your kid, a forgiving game 1, and a difficulty curve that grows with you. It's a near-perfect gateway. Value and table presence. 7 scenarios, lush components, house dice, tons of cards, frequent sale prices, it's a steal. Where it falls short, luck of the draw, a bad shuffle, or a cruel dark arts flip can genuinely cost you a game. It's a deck builder, variance is the cost of admission. No card removal equals late game bloat. Because you can't purge weak cards, later games can leave your deck and the market feeling clogged. Reviewers specifically flag the market getting stuck when nothing's affordable. Villain event repetition. Within a given book, there are only so many unique villains, so some repetition creeps in. One-time campaign, the big one, the surprises land once. You can reset and replay, and the expansions extend life, but if you crave fresh strategic puzzles forever, the campaign's magic is finite. That box, it's large and awkward to shelve, minor. But every owner mentions it. The balanced verdict, Hogwarts Battle is a asterisk theme end experience asterisk triumph with asterisk medium light asterisk mechanical depth. If you want the Wizarding World delivered as a shared, escalating cooperative story, nothing in this price bracket does it better. If you want a bottomless strategic engine, look elsewhere or grab the monster box to stretch the challenge. Bring it for the experience, keep it for the people, and let Game 7 earn its bragging rights. The replayability after the campaign debate, this is the dividing line in the fandom. One camp, it's one and done, the surprises only hit once. The other, we reset it, house ruled it into a tighter legacy run, and the system holds up for years. Truth is both are right, it depends whether you play for reveals or for the system. Know which camp you're in before you buy. Beat the late game bloat since you can't trash cards, fight bloat at the source. be ruthlessly selective at the market, prioritize cards with draw play extra effects to dig past your starters, and don't buy a card unless it meaningfully outpowers what it'll dilute. A lean, mean deck beats a fat one every time here. Final verdict: Harry Potter, Hogwarts Battle is the gold standard Wizarding World board game and one of the best gateway cooperative deck builders ever made. Its genius is the sealed 7-box campaign, a gentle game 1 tutorial that grows, year by year, into a genuinely tense game 7 against Voldemort and 6 Horcruxes, with theme woven so tightly into the mechanics that the art literally ages with the characters. It's medium-light board game geek tilde 2.08, so strategy hounds chasing a bottomless engine should temper expectations, and the honest knocks are real. Luck of the draw, no way to purge weak cards, late-game bloat, and a largely one-time campaign. But for Harry Potter fans, families, new gamers, and anyone who wants a shared, escalating story they're all on the same side of, nothing in this price bracket competes. Buy the base game first, it's complete on its own. Then only if you want more, monster box to make it harder, charms and potions to make it easier, and defense against the dark arts purely for two-player dueling. Bring your house pride, sleeve your cards, and don't you dare peek inside Game 7 early. Frequently asked questions. How do you play Harry Potter, Hogwarts Battle? Each player picks a hero, Harry, Ron, Hermione, or Neville, with a starter deck. On your turn, you reveal dark arts events, the bad guys hitting back, draw a hand of 5 cards, then play them for 2 resources. Influence to buy spells, allies, items from a 6-card market into your discard pile, and attack to defeat villains equal to their health. Unspent resources discard at end of turn. You win by defeating all villains, you lose if the villains take control of every location. Is Harry Potter, Hogwarts Battle worth it? For Harry Potter fans and anyone wanting an accessible cooperative deck builder, yes, it's one of the best-loved licensed gateway games, with theme baked into the mechanics and a campaign that escalates beautifully. The main caveats are luck of the draw and that it's largely a one-time campaign. How long does a game of Hogwarts Battle take? About 30 to 60 minutes per game, the op lists up to 60 minutes. Early games like Game 1 are quicker since they're simpler. Later games run longer as villains, locations, and card decks grow. A full 7-game campaign typically spans several play sessions rather than one sitting. How many players can play Hogwarts Battle? The base game supports 2 to 4 players cooperatively. The Monster Box of Monsters adds Luna, and the Charms and Potions expansion adds Ginny, each raising the cap toward 5 players. You can also play solo using the op's official solo rules, and Defense Against the Dark Arts is a separate competitive game for exactly 2 players. Is Hogwarts Battle hard? It starts very easy and gets genuinely challenging. Game 1 is a gentle tutorial with just 3 villains, difficulty climbs steadily, and Game 7, destroying 6 Horcruxes before you can damage Voldemort, is notoriously tough. Overall complexity is medium light board game geek weight tilde 2.085. If you find it too easy, the Monster Box expansion ramps the difficulty, the Charms and Potions expansion eases it. What order should I buy and play the Hogwarts Battle expansions? Start with the base game and finish, or at least start its 7-game campaign first. Then, buy the Monster Box of Monsters if you want it harder, or the Charms and Potions if you want it easier, deeper. Both integrate into the base campaign and can be combined. Defense Against the Dark Arts is a standalone competitive duel that does not combine with the cooperative game. Buy it only for 2-player PvP. Is Hogwarts Battle kid-friendly, and what age is it for? It's rated 11+, which is a fair floor for reading cards and managing resources. But because it's fully cooperative, younger Potter-loving kids can absolutely play alongside an adult who co-pilots without it feeling like letting them win. Game 1's gentle tutorial makes it a great family on-ramp. Let the kids roll the Hogwarts house dice. Can you play Hogwarts Battle solo? Yes. The op publishes official solo play rules so one person can run the campaign controlling 1 or more heroes, take on Voldemort single-handedly. It's a satisfying way to experience the full arc on your own, though like the multiplayer game, it carries some luck of the draw swing. What happens after you finish the Hogwarts Battle campaign? Because nothing is permanently destroyed, it's not a true legacy game, you can reset the entire campaign and replay it from game 1. You can also play any single game as a one-off. That said, the first-time reveals only happen once, so post-campaign value comes from replaying favorite games, increasing difficulty, or adding the expansions for fresh challenges. Can you replay Hogwarts Battle, or is it one and done? You can replay it fully. The boxes reseal conceptually and no components are consumed. The community is split. Some treat it as a one-time campaign experience, the surprises land once, while others reset it, house-rule it, and keep it in rotation for years. Whether it's one and done depends on whether you play for the reveals or for the underlying system. How does Hogwarts Battle compare to other cooperative deck builders? It's lighter and more thematic than crunchy cooperative deck builders, prioritizing the Harry Potter experience and an escalating campaign over deep strategic optimization, weight tilde 2.085. Its standout feature is the 7-box, story-driven campaign, few cooperative deck builders deliver that unfolding narrative structure. If you want maximum strategic depth, it's Modest. If you want theme, accessibility, and a built-in campaign, it's near the top of the category. Do you need the expansions to enjoy Hogwarts Battle? Number the base game is a complete self-contained 7-game campaign and is the only required purchase. The expansions are for groups who have finished the base game and want to extend it, Monster Box for more challenge, charms and potions for more tools variety. Buy them only if you loved the base campaign and want more of the same heroes and system.